This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasuthi. It is Earth Matters. The east coast and west coast of Peninsular Malaysia and the coasts of Sabah and Sarawak are home to 27 species of dolphins, whales, porpoises and dugongs. However, marine mammals in Malaysia are being threatened by increased levels of pollution in our waters. As our country embarks on the journey to development, the conditions of our waters are being neglected. Speaking to us about these challenges today is Dr. Luisa Punnampala. She's a research fellow at the Institute of Ocean and Earth Sciences and co-founder of the Meerkat Research Organization. Dr. Luisa was on the show with us approximately, I think it was about a year ago. I mean, it seems like ages ago. Welcome, Luisa. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
You know, last year we spoke to you about the Pew Fellowship in Marine Conservation, which you were honored, you know, to be a recipient of that, and you had a grant and stuff like that. How's the research going on that?
The research has been going really well. We started in April last year, and we've been doing field work and collecting data all of this year. So we are discovering new things about our dugong populations. We've been using different methods to study them, aerial surveys, acoustic surveys. We're looking at contaminants. We're working with a big team of local and international scientists. Coming up next year, we'll be doing work on seagrass, looking at the extent, the boundaries, and looking at the economic value of conserving the area. But also this year, what's been good is that we've been able to kickstart some discussions with management authorities, government authorities, on the possibilities of providing a protected area for the dugongs and their seagrass in areas where we have found now that dugongs are always there with the mother and calves, but it is outside current existing marine parks. So we're discussing on how we can move forward to better protect and manage these areas that are unprotected currently. And it's good because there are already marine parks in place. We just need to look at expanding and coming up with a system of managing it and sustaining it operationally and financially.
I think last year we also spoke about the seagrass and how important it is to the dugongs. The dugong is actually under the IUCN of nature's red listed for threatened species, am I correct?
Yep.
So what are their threats at the moment? And are they predominantly here in the Malaysian coastal areas?
So in Malaysia, for Peninsular Malaysia, dugongs are found only in Johor. And right now, we feel that they are most reliably found off the east coast of Johor. There used to be populations of dugongs, frequenting the Johor Straits. But given, high industrialization now in that area, the Johor East Coast seems to be what I call the last stronghold for these animals. And in Malaysia, they are endangered, even though their global status is vulnerable. And the primary threats that they do face are, one is that the lack of protection for their seagrass habitat. In Malaysian law, there is no legal provision for seagrass protection. Pollution, of course, coastal development that causes pollution, runoff.
Which in turn affects the seagrass.
Yeah, which in turn affects the seagrass. They are a plant, like any plant, they photosynthesize. Entanglement in fishing gear. We do not have any statistics on, how many are caught a year by accident. But, gill nets and nets in general are a problem for marine mammals the world over. So I don't see why we wouldn't be having any entanglements here. And habitat destruction. We've seen trawlers on my surveys. We've seen trawlers trawling in marine park areas, trawling through marine park areas on the edge, and just digging up everything in its path. So these are some of the main threats that...
Some may say, Luisa, if we lose the dugong, so what?
Yeah, so what? But they are so iconic. They are a flagship, a mascot for conservation. Seagrasses are so important for our lives on land. They have a lot of ecosystem function. And the seagrass and the dugong need each other. And with no seagrass, there'll be no dugongs. So when we lose our dugongs, it's probably because there's no more seagrass. And what happens then to maybe our coastline? There's less protection. There's less purification of the water. Maybe the seabed becomes a little less stable because seagrasses stabilize the sediments. So, and seagrasses are a nursery ground for a lot of the commercially important species of fish that we eat. So losing the seagrass means you take away one part of the fish's life cycle. So maybe there'll be less of these fisheries resources, which anyway, it's already dwindling, but removing that one part of their life cycle could be even more detrimental.
Are you like fighting against the tide to make a difference as far as all of this is concerned?
Yes, I mean, you know, there are not that many, if you're talking about dugongs alone, there are really not that many dugongs in Johor. And day after day, you know, they are exposed to threats. And we're not always out there to monitor, but I think the sooner we can afford them some habitat protection and a proper system of managing that protection plan, the better it would be for them.
And at the end of the Pew Fellowship in Marine Conservation Research, when it finishes, when is it due to be completed?
2017.
Okay. What happens after that, Louisa?
What happens after that? Well, I hope that we can continue to raise funds to keep our research work going, to monitor at least where they're going, where they're moving, maybe to expand on the research to answer questions that might have come up in these 3 years of the Pew Fellowship. But to get on the ground, to do more work with consulting the stakeholders that use this area, whose lives would be affected if we came up with some sort of a marine protected area for the dugongs, to work with the authorities, and to also empower the local communities and the people who operate in these areas, you know, to have them understand the value of conserving what they have there. So it'll be a lot of people consultation and people management, and not so much animal oriented. I mean, that's the subject, you know, the focal point, but it's having to talk to people and getting them to agree to partake in conservation.
What about the dolphins? How are they doing? Langkawi Dolphin Research Project. I know a lot of people still don't believe that we have dolphins in the waters of Malaysia, amongst, you know. And we do.
We do. We do.
Just off the coast of Port Klang.
Yes. Just.
Who would have thought?
Just there are, you know, some islands outside Port Klang and the mangrove habitat. So we have some of the coastal species that we find there that we do find in Langkawi and also Matang in Perak, which is our other project site. The dolphins are doing all right, but again, we don't have data on bycatch. We don't have data on entanglement. And I'm hoping to be able to start some of that work in the very near future, working with our fisheries department to address this issue of, you know, how many are being caught. We've had quite a number of dead animals that we've chanced upon during our surveys, but because they were in such high levels of decomposition, it was impossible to say what happened to them. But you know, I'm sure that at least one or two of those carcasses might have been from accidental entanglement. The water is, you know, increasing in vessel traffic, so we have to look out for that as well, where the boats are passing, where the animals are also being found. For example, in Langkawi, we found areas where we always see porpoises and dolphins, but it's also where the main ferry channels are going in and out. You know, sometimes we are working with a group of animals for about an hour, following them, photographing them, collecting data, and at least five ferries would have passed by right in the vicinity. So these are the things that we need to look into, managing the overlap of animals and human activity.
Can we detour the ferries? Is there a possibility?
Some routes, maybe you can't really detour because of the geography of the place, but what we can do is to suggest for a speed limit zone, you know, where boats just have to slow down for a short period of time till they pass through, and then they can go on their merry way again.
So what is actually the biggest threat to the animals that you work with? I mean, the dolphins, the whales. Do we have whales here?
We do have whales. Mm-hmm. They are an infrequent occurrence, but we have seen whales around Langkawi, around Pulau Paya. I know of people who have seen whales near the estuaries of Tanjung Dawai in Kedah. And of course, out in the South China Sea, out there, we do have whales. Just we don't see them as often.
So what are the biggest threats to them at the moment?
I think the biggest threats are, you know, the usual habitat destruction, degradation, a great depletion of their prey resources. Basically, we are competing with them, or they are competing with us for food. Our fisheries are quite depleted. You know, the world over, world fisheries are depleted, and they're eating more or less the same things as we are. So I think they're finding it hard to cari makan, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then there's more fishing effort out there to, you know, feed a growing population. So there are more nets out there. So when there are more nets out there, the risk of entanglement is higher. You know, there are more trawlers out there. You know, like in Malaysia, trawlers still operate. So you get a lot of disturbance in their habitat, you know, because everything gets sort of trawled up. So those are, I think I would say one of the biggest threats. And maybe also indifference, yeah, you know, our own indifference to what's happening out there.
And in terms of mammals, these marine mammals, how do they represent or how do they reflect the degrading marine ecosystem at the moment?
So marine mammals, because they are apex predators, they sit at the top of the marine food web. They are indicators of ocean health. We call them the sentinels of ocean health. And so they accumulate all the toxins that start from the bottom of the food chain, from the plankton all the way up. And, you know, we can test for their toxin levels, especially if we chance upon a carcass, we can do these toxicology analysis. And also they, as I said earlier, they eat what we eat, fish, prawns, crustacean, squid. And they're all about food. I mean, you know, they spend a lot of their time hunting for food and feeding themselves because they need to have enough energy to move around. And if there's no more fish, they have to move away, because that's what you do, right? You move on to look for food. And so they're an indicator, because if an area used to have a lot of dolphins, or, you know, and now there isn't any more or a lot less, we have to ask ourselves why. And it's probably linked to the fact that their prey resources have depleted, and they have to, you know, travel further to look for food.
So how would you describe the marine ecosystem around the, you know, coastal areas of Malaysia?
I think a lot of it is in bad shape. A lot of it is, you know, reefs. There are a lot of reefs that are destroyed, you know, by bombing, bleaching. Coastal areas are being cleared of mangroves, you know, for development. Our seagrasses are somewhat protected only within marine park areas, but, you know, anywhere else they're not protected. So I think our marine environment is in actually quite a bad shape. There are not so many happy stories to tell.
Yeah, and always when we talk about, you know, the health of the, you know, marine ecosystem, you always think of just the marine life, right?
Yeah.
Without realizing that it has an impact on us.
Yes.
How is that?
Because, you know, pollution in pollution in the sea results in the marine life in the sea consuming whatever that's in there that's being contaminated. For example, some scientists in the UK recently discovered that zooplankton, these small microscopic organisms that form, you know, at the bottom of the food chain, they were consuming microplastics, you know, these little plastics that have broken down, in, you know, after a long time, broken down to small particles in the water, or from your facial scrubs that you have micro beads.
Mm-hmm.
These are all plastic beads. And they get in the water, and these small organisms were found to be, you know, consuming them along with whatever food source that they take in the water column. And then this zooplankton is eaten by a fish, and then that fish is eaten by a bigger fish and a bigger fish, and then finally it gets up to us humans. So we are what we eat. So what are we eating? So what are we? Yeah. So any contaminant or pollutant that enters the marine system will eventually end up some way in our bodies.
The next time you have micro, you know, beads in your facial wash, think about it coming back and landing on your table, on your dinner table.
Yes.
Actually. That's coming up. We'll find out more about whether, you know, Malaysia actually has been ranked the 8th in the world on the litter bug ladder And last week we spoke during an interview about solid waste management in Malaysia. How does that affect the marine life in the ecosystem? Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. I'm Mira Sivasothi and it's Earth Matters. We are catching up with Dr. Louisa Punnampalam. She's a research fellow at the Institute of Ocean and Earth Sciences, co-founder of the Meerkat Research Organization. We're trying to, you know, over the years since we've had Louisa on, trying to figure out the status of marine life, the work that she does, working with dolphins, whales, dugongs around the, you know, coastal waters of Malaysia, coastal areas of Malaysia. And it doesn't sound very, very promising, actually, the health of the ecosystem around the coastal areas. Plastic, Louisa, you just left off talking about plastic is a common debris. We use tons of plastic in our everyday life. How does that... And, you know, we always hear of stories of how, the dolphin or the sharks may actually, get tangled in a plastic bag or whatever. But it's much more than that. It's lurking around everywhere. As you said, your facial wash with the little...
Microbeads.
Microbeads actually, you know... Come back and land on your dinner table.
Yes.
Tell us more about the plastic.
So I found a report from 1976, from a UN-supported workshop that was held in Malaysia. 1976, so about 40 years ago. And that report already was reporting about marine pollution issues in Malaysia. And 40 years on, where we are so much more developed, our population has increased. Coastal habitation, industry, tourism has all increased. I believe that our marine environment has surely degraded significantly since then. And plastics is a real problem, on this planet. A study in 1975, there was an estimated 5.8 million metric tons of debris of all sorts, not just plastics, but every kind of material that entered into oceans annually. And this 5.8 million did not yet consider land to sea input. This was just at sea discharges, so from ships, from vessels that were throwing things overboard. Helium balloons, things that we like to release into the air and say, oh, it's flying away. Helium balloons, there's almost 1.3 million plastic balloons that we have released, at least 1.3 million, that we've released and that have been collected from coastlines all over the world. That's a lot, it's everywhere. Plastic is everywhere. I was, 2 weeks ago, I was in the field in Johor for our dugong research, and literally every day, my team and I were collecting plastic off the beach, off the water surface. When we were diving, it was in the water column. There was plastic on the seagrass bed. And we're talking about sometimes big sheets of plastic, like those big black rubbish bags. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those things. And we took off at about 3 big bags of plastics off the island to send it to a recycling facility. And that was just a small dent in what was there and what we could take. And what we took were mostly the mineral bottles, the PET bottles. Yep. But there was just so much other things that was... on that beach, little toys, bits. And then you can see plastic that was had already disintegrated, become brittle, and with on its journey to becoming a microplastic in the water column. Where marine mammals are concerned, we've had in the last 1 year quite a few stranding cases that we know of that were able to be cut open. And the most recent one being March of this year in Kudat in Sabah, when a pilot whale had stranded, and I think it was it lived on for a few more days. They were trying to give it every medical care possible in Sabah, and it finally died. And when they cut it open, there was about 4 kilograms of plastics that it had ingested. So this whale looked like it was quite a young animal. But it was emaciated because it probably stopped feeding for a while. And then, imagine eating 4 kilograms of plastic. Mm-hmm. If we just closed our eyes now and imagine chewing on that wrapper, of your sweet or whatever, 4 kgs of it, we would feel so ill. But this is a problem. It's in the water. It's everywhere. It's getting into our food. It's getting into animal stomachs. Countless die from it. And not just dying, dying is one thing, but they suffer such a slow death because it doesn't kill them immediately. Mm-hmm. it blocks the whole digestive tract, and then it takes a while before they feel really ill, and then it takes a while before the body starts to shut down, before they strand, and then before they finally die. So it's such a slow and painful death.
Okay. Well, picking up from there, it's interesting that you've come in today, because at 4 o'clock in our health show, it's about cancer and the environment and how that has played a role as far as cancer is concerned. And you know what? This is probably one. All of these are contributing factors, isn't it?
Yes.
Malaysia ranked 8th in the world on the litterbug ladder. And in last week's show, when we spoke about Malaysia's solid waste on the big picture, management of solid waste is a big problem in this country as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sewage, littering, they affect the marine mammals as well. How does that affect? I mean, plastic is one big problem. I mean, in the wider scope of things, sewage, littering, how much of a role does that play as far as marine degradation is concerned?
So we've observed some dolphins in our site in Perak, in Matang, that have skin conditions. We particularly saw one animal that was on its own. It had difficulty swimming like a normal dolphin, and its body was covered in lesions and what looked like boils. It was just nasty stuff. It was all over from its snout all the way to its tail. This was in late 2013, and we have not seen this dolphin again. It might be dead by now. There was a scientific paper that was published from my boss's lab and University of Malaya that looked at water quality in this fishing village in Perak, and they found multiple pathogenic bacteria contamination in the waters of this fishing village and in the estuary. And it probably results from a lack of proper sewage management. And while we don't have data to prove this link, you know, having seen these dolphins out there that have lesions and boils and nodules popping up on their skin, I imagine it's linked somewhat to the water quality. And then it comes back to us, and what I said again, what's getting into our food? Because these fishes, they live there. They have no choice of avoiding suspended particulate matter, right? So they just eat. Some of them feed off the riverbed, off the estuary bed. What are they ingesting? And so what are we eating?
Comes back again.
Comes back to the dinner plate issue.
To the top of the food chain. Who sits there?
Yes.
And the impact of noise pollution. I know this is rarely spoken about on cetaceans. It has become a study topic around the world, but Malaysia has little, if not even not much data available on this issue. Do you even monitor noise pollution, and is it a really big problem?
We, as far as I know, there isn't any study at the moment on noise pollution and marine life, especially marine mammals. And I think it's hard to know what is the magnitude, you know, what are the real issues, because we don't understand what's going on out there. We don't have the data. We don't know what are the main sources, or maybe we do know, but we have not quantified the main sources, the magnitude. And so we have not studied what the impacts are to these animals. So we can't really address how big the problem is if we don't understand. I was just reviewing the Environmental Quality Act 1974 last night, looking for something about noise pollution, and in there is just a brief mention about restrictions on noise pollution, but it doesn't go into the specifics of noise pollution relating to marine noise pollution. So, you know, we still need to review our current laws and strengthen them, and to be expanded to be all inclusive rather than just a brief mention that, oh, noise pollution should be restricted below this level or that level or whatever. So we know very little, and I think there's scope for research on the impacts of marine noise pollution on our marine life.
Do you think laws really matter in cases in the well-being, when we're discussing the well-being of marine mammals, for an example? Do you think laws even matter? Because from everything that you're saying, it comes back to us. We are the source of this problem.
Laws do matter, because they provide a basis for argument. If something has been done in inappropriately, it provides a basis for argument. And you know, in Malaysia, we have good laws, you know, relating to environment, relating to conservation. Some can be improved, but some are pretty good, very comprehensive. The problem is enforcement. So enforcement, compliance, and monitoring, that's what we really fall short. So it does come back to us, because we can have the law in a nice book, in a nice document, but we need the people who are in charge of the relevant laws to implement and to enforce and to monitor for compliance.
But this goes back to a personal level, Louisa. All of these problems go back to a personal level. What you use as, you know, shampoo, or how much plastics you consume, everything comes back to us on a personal level. You don't really need laws. You don't really need enforcement, probably on a wider scale.
Yeah.
But it goes back to you and I,
yeah,
and our consumption behavior,
yeah,
really. And how do we change that?
We have to find it in ourselves to want to care about the environment that we're living in. It's very hard, especially if you're living in the city and you're far removed from the natural environment. But everything will come back to haunt you. The show later talks about cancer and the environment and how that might have played a role. It might not be immediate, yeah, because I think the human body can tolerate quite a high level of assault, so to speak. But we have to find it in ourselves to want to live in a better environment and to take the initiative to understand what are the issues and what needs to be done. Because we can't complain, oh, it's so dirty, it's so polluted, I don't want to swim there, I don't want to go to that beach. We can't complain if we're not going to be the ones taking care of the place as well. Yeah, because who's going to pick up after us? Nobody. You yeah. have to pick up after yourself. If you go for a picnic, clean up before you go, dispose of the waste properly. And just picking that interest in ourselves to care.
Yeah, and it starts with us, really.
Yeah.
I've heard people say, you know, the municipality doesn't put enough garbage bins, you know, for us to dispose of our waste. Well, if they don't, bring your own garbage bag.
Yeah.
Biodegradable. See, it goes back to all that, isn't it? You use a plastic bag and then that affects. It's just a vicious cycle, really.
We also have to, I think, not just taking interest in caring for the environment, but making it a point to really reduce our usage of plastic. You know, plastic is really one of the best, some people say one of the best inventions
yep.
on earth. It's helped living, you know, and in so many convenient ways. But its impacts are also so bad. And so we need to find ways to reduce our usage. You know, do we really need to take that plastic bag for one can of Coke? Can we carry it in our hand? Could we take our own Tupperware to pack food?
Mm-hmm.
Can we pack that little, you know, foldable, reusable bag? Just remember to put it in your bag or your pocket. Just little things that they might be small and insignificant steps, but if everybody did it, it adds up, and every small step adds up. And once you get into the habit of it, you know, it's just easy. Oh, there's a bag in my bag.
Yes.
Here, have it. Please put all my stuff in there. And we have hands, so if we don't have that many things, we can just
yes.
carry it.
And you're right, it's habit. I remember struggling in the beginning, trying to just take my grocery bags, you know, to remember to take the
yes.
grocery bags. But as I kept doing it, it became second nature, really.
Yeah.
I cannot go grocery shopping without those bags
yes.
now. So, and then wherever else you go, you say, you know what, I really don't need a bag. Thank you very much, you know. Or I'll just take one bag and dump it all in one bag.
Yes.
So don't get those plastic bags because you need it for your garbage, to throw your garbage. You can actually use biodegradable bags. Yes, and the other thing is it costs a lot more, Louisa, to be environmentally friendly. Whether you buy that environmentally soap or shampoo or cosmetics or even plastic bags, it costs a lot more.
Conservation, contrary to popular belief, conservation is not cheap, whether at the research level, whether at the underground level. And what you just said, it costs a lot more to be more green in your habits. But it goes back to that saying, right? You get what you pay for. So are we willing to invest and spend money to live in a healthy environment, in a healthy planet? Or we're not willing, we want to live in the here and now for that short moment of thrill or convenience of throwing things away and forgetting about it, and then suffering. I think it's up to us. So we get what we pay for. Mm-hmm.
Think about it. Think about those beads that, you know, you
use things with walnut shells or even coffee scrubs, you know, coffee, ground coffee. Yeah. Works
and
well.
That you have already used, you know, and you can just dump it in and
So just to be more aware of what we're using, read labels. Read the labels.
Your message on the tainted lives of Malaysia's marine mammals.
As I've just said, you know, earlier, I just think we just need to be more aware, make more conscious choices about our daily habits, our products, where we choose to take a holiday, which operators which are maybe practicing green habits versus those that are not. Simple things like if you have a party, don't release those balloons. Clean up after yourself. And just, I guess, just thinking about the world that we want to live in. Yeah, it's all our responsibility, yours, mine, and everybody else out there.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dr. Louisa Ponnampalam, a research fellow at the Institute of Ocean and Earth Sciences and co-founder of the Meerkat Research Organization, talking to us about the marine mammals on The Bigger Picture BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.